Where is his questioning and demands for information if we take this at face value?
U.S. soldiers face new threats in Afghanistan. It's Wednesday, July 1st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're glad to have you with us. You'll also find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, frontline doctors, as 10 million people worldwide contract coronavirus. Big business takes on a big social issue, virus and the homeless. Immigrants go online. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. lawmakers called for an immediate investigation into news reports that Russia had offered bounties to Taliban-backed militants for the deaths of U.S. troops in Afghanistan. The White House has denied reports U.S. President Donald Trump had been briefed on those bounties, saying they had not been fully verified by the U.S. intelligence community. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more on the fallout in Washington.
A Russian military unit offered money to Taliban-backed militants as a reward for the deaths of U.S. troops in Afghanistan. That U.S. intelligence community finding reached President Trump, according to a New York Times story. The White House called the Times report false.
There was not a consensus among the intelligence community. And in fact, there were dissenting opinions within the intelligence community, and it would not be elevated to the president until it was verified.
That follows the president's Sunday tweet denying any knowledge of that intelligence, a position Senate Democrats say is inexcusable.
President Trump, you lose either way. If you weren't briefed on this important report, how can you run an administration where something this important is not brought to your level? And if you were told about the report and did nothing, that's even worse. Shame on you. Shame on you.
Congressional Republicans are also asking why the president was not briefed and called on Trump to take the allegations seriously. Democrats saying it's further proof Trump is not tough enough on Russian President Vladimir Putin.
The president is saying that he did not know of this. But where is the outrage from him that he didn't know about this? Where is his questioning and demands for information if we take this at face value? It is another example of this unusual hold that Putin has on this president.
The White House is pushing back on that criticism.
This president has been extremely strong on Russia, imposing sanctions on hundreds of Russian individuals, expelling dozens of diplomats, closing two Russian consulates, withdrawing from an INF treaty, and several other actions.
Both Russia and the Taliban have denied that bounties were offered, but the New York Times report was confirmed by British intelligence. Schumer and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi have called for all members of Congress to receive a full briefing on the intelligence and how much the president knew. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Chinese scientists discover the new H1N1 virus strain that could infect humans. Caught between virus and violence in Indian Kashmir. Taliban attempts to reassure Pompeo amid Russia bounty controversy. U.S. Republican lawmakers urge action after Russia-Afghanistan briefing. Korean baseball fans return with fewer cheers and no beer. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more when you pay a visit to Facebook at VOA Asia. You'll find us on Instagram and Twitter as well and the VOAnews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Frontline medical workers at a Maryland intensive care unit say the coronavirus pandemic is far from being over. More than 30 U.S. states have reported case number surges after taking steps to reopen. And this comes as cases worldwide surpass the 10 million mark and more than 500,000 people have died. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports.
The Fort Washington Medical Center in the state of Maryland went from 4 ICU beds at the start of the pandemic to 16 ICU units as it quickly became a hotspot for the virus during the early days of the crisis. Kevin Cole, a respiratory therapist at Fort Washington who also has asthma, says he knows the anxiety and fear coronavirus patients experience when they can't breathe. And it's hard for him to understand the sudden return of crowded public places when it's hard to social distance.
I see patients unfortunately dying from this virus every day. Everybody is out lounging on the beaches and just thinking that it's over, and it's not. It's far from being over. Yeah. And unfortunately, it's those people that will keep this pandemic going.
After taking steps to reopen, 31 states are now seeing surges in new coronavirus cases, including new hotspots of Arizona, Texas, and Florida. With more than 8,500 new confirmed cases of COVID-19 and 29 deaths reported on Sunday, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said that interactions among young people are driving the surge in confirmed cases.
Our median age of new case began in the 60s in March. For most of the pandemic in April and May was in the low 50s. Now, this week, Russ, the last 10 days probably, it's been between like 33 and 36 for the median age. Half the cases are in their early 30s or below.
Back in Maryland, registered nurse Trakina Hogan says seeing colleagues put on full sets of personal protective equipment required to enter rooms with COVID-positive patients is a constant reminder of how easily the virus can spread.
This is a real thing. It is not fake. You know, it is definitely one that we need to take serious precautions on. Keep our masks on, keep our hands washed. We come to work so that we can take care of them, but we need them to take care of themselves and not get relaxed.
A message echoed by her colleagues and medical staff all over the country. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, Beijing has passed a national security law for Hong Kong, which many fear could be used to override existing legal processes and further erode the city's civil and political freedoms. The law contains 6 articles and 66 clauses that are in effect immediately. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, U.S. corporations are responding to a wave of protests over the recent death of George Floyd, a black man who died while in police custody, with pledges to increase diversity, donations to civil rights groups, and in some cases, changes in company policies long sought by critics. VOA's Julie Tabo tells us more.
I have resigned as a member of the Reddit board. I have urged them to fill my seat with a black candidate.
Alexis Ohanian is married to tennis star Serena Williams, who is black. But even without that personal connection, many in the corporate world are saying black lives matter.
I'm saying this as a father who needs to be able to answer his black daughter when she asks, "What did you do?"
Out of the 500 largest U.S. companies, there are just 4 black CEOs, says Fortune, which ranks America's largest companies.
No justice, no peace!
Amid global protests, more corporations are now pledging to put their money where their mouth is. Apple is increasing spending with black-owned suppliers. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg announced in a Facebook post that his company will be donating an additional $10 million to groups working on racial justice. Google CEO Sundar Pichai wrote that the company would give $12 million to organizations working to address racial inequalities. YouTube said it will use $100 million to fund black content creators. And Bank of America pledged $1 billion over 4 years to address inequality.
When you see people taking to the streets like they did, you know something is happening. That this is the beginning of a movement. It's not business as usual. And I think businesses are realizing that, wait a minute, something different is happening here. And we can't just continue to do things the way we did before. That, after all, is what protests and unrest are all about. It's about forcing people who won't do it otherwise to change.
And it's not just about the money, but policies also. Walmart used to lock multicultural beauty products away in stores. That stopped after critics said it suggested customers of those products are more likely to shoplift. In early June, Amazon announced that it will donate $10 million to organizations supporting justice and equity. The world's largest online retailer has also frozen police use of its facial recognition technology, which critics have said is more likely to misidentify people with dark skin. And NASCAR, prompted by its only black driver, has banned the Confederate flag, a symbol of white segregationists, at its racetracks and events. It's been unusual in the past for big brands to embrace activism for fear of alienating customers. Now, it seems, many see it as a greater risk to not take a stand. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Better than expected economic numbers from China have helped Asian markets rebound from Monday's staggering losses. China's monthly survey of factory managers is up, along with stronger than expected U.S. housing market in the face of rising COVID-19 cases. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. LGBT performers thrive in Vietnam, while garment makers in Bangladesh stitch together protective gear for the world. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Ira Melman.
Nam Vai is one of hundreds of LGBT performers in Vietnam who have found confidence and a way to earn a living through lotto shows, a form of entertainment dating back to the French colonial era and now wildly popular in the South. Like many sexual and gender minority people in Vietnam, the 26-year-old has faced stigma and discrimination for much of her life, despite a gradual change in social attitudes in the communist state.
The LGBT group cannot have jobs that are considered high in society because we suffer from discrimination right since we were at school, so we didn't have much motivation to continue with our studies. There are some with high education, but not many.
Up until the 1990s, such performances were a regular part of rural life in the South, but their appeal began to fade until Saigon Tan Toy burst onto the mainstream nightlife circuit in 2017. Vietnam is seen as relatively progressive on LGBT issues. The one-party state lifted the ban on same-sex marriage in 2015, although it stopped short of full legal recognition for the unions, and a long-promised transgender law to allow legal gender changes has not yet materialized. Much of the audience at the shows in Ho Chi Minh City and next door of Binh Duong province is young and view the rainbow of swishing gowns through their phone screen. Facing ruin as orders from Western brands collapsed in the coronavirus pandemic, many Bangladeshi garment factories have been given a lifeline with orders to make protective masks, gloves, and gowns for export. Nonetheless, hundreds of thousands of workers who used to work in export-oriented apparel factories in the South Asian country remain jobless despite the new orders and some recovery in Western markets. At factories in the industrial town of Sabar, just north of Dhaka, thousands of workers are now working 8-hour shifts, 6 days a week, making personal protective equipment. On the factory floor, sewing machines operated by hundreds of workers whirled loudly beside huge stacks of white and light blue gowns.
I lost my job at my previous workplace. When I heard Bexumco Group was opening this PPE making hub, I came and I joined here.
Bexumco, a major supplier to the owners of brands like Zara, Calvin Klein, and Tommy Hilfiger, last month exported 6.5 million medical gowns to U.S. brand Hanes, and it expects to export some $250 million worth of protective gear this year.
I feel lucky for getting work in this factory while many others lost jobs, now facing difficulties living. At least I can feed my family and parents.
Sumaya Akhtar and Ruba Maya, who lost their jobs making apparel for Western retailers, were among the workers making final adjustments to the clothing. For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
VOA Asia continues. As you're probably well aware, locking down at home is one of the strategies that authorities in the United States and elsewhere have relied on to reduce the spread of COVID-19. But how does that work for almost 600,000 people who are homeless in the United States? VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias went to the streets and shelters of Washington, D.C. to get a first-hand look.
A. Addison doesn't look like your typical homeless person. He was once a counselor for teenagers in trouble. But these days, he lives on the streets after falling on hard times.
The toll it takes on the body, physically, psychologically, and emotionally. Having to get back and forth just to get breakfast, lunch, dinner, clothing, shelter.
And now, there is COVID-19.
Not having cleaning agents or disinfectants in spaces, regardless of where it is, I think opens up the potential for people to get the infection.
Alexson is one of nearly 600,000 homeless people in the United States, based on the most recent official count. In a pandemic, they are at special risk. Of the 527 COVID-19 deaths in Washington, 20 were homeless people. As a group, their risk of death is about double that of the overall population.
As folks come in and as we do checks throughout the day, if folks say that they're feeling symptomatic, we'll take them out of the population of the shelters, and we'll bring them to one of our isolation and quarantine sites, and we'll test them there. If that comes back positive, then we'll go back and we'll find the close contacts for that person and also ask them to come into our isolation and quarantine as well.
Around the country, officials had to stop shelters from becoming a breeding ground.
About a couple weeks into the pandemic, people quickly realized that it was spreading inside shelters very, very, very fast. And a lot of the focus was to do what we call deconcentrate shelters. So they started moving people out of shelters into larger spaces. Some jurisdictions rented arenas and others did hotel rooms.
61-year-old Mary Montalvo lives in a nearby park. She gets food and hygiene products from local nonprofits and churches. But a new mask, that is tougher.
They try to give one, I'd say, every second or third day. But many of the people wear, lose them.
Where do you go if you need to wash your hands?
That's very difficult. I go inside the church here, but I have some cleanser that I carry in my jacket and I use that.
COVID-19 has made it harder for those like Michael Williams, who's looking for work. Day centers have adopted strict social distancing.
It takes extra long to get services you need because they only allow one person at a time. Without these spaces, it's kind of hard. I'm not able to apply for jobs. I can't get any income, and it's crazy.
U.S. unemployment is at a staggering 14%. A Columbia University study projects the homeless population may grow 40 to 45% this year.
I expect that if unemployment continues to stretch for a long period of time, that we will start to see decreases in rent payments and we will start to see evictions.
The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development has announced almost $3 billion in aid for homeless Americans and those at risk of losing housing. But that's just temporary.
In the capital, housing is really expensive. And so until we start addressing how to have steady employment that pays closer to the cost of housing, we're going to keep seeing this crisis of homelessness.
Mary Montalvo has been homeless 8 times in 20 years.
There's sufficient money within the United States to help the people who are homeless. It's just the distribution of those monies. The wealthy are getting wealthier and they're ignoring the poor.
For VOA News, Veronica Valderas Iglesias, Washington.
You're listening to VOA Asia. A Virginia NGO called Computer Corps helps low-income immigrants master using computers in order to help them find jobs. However, the coronavirus pandemic has made life hard for the organization because so few of the students have computers or internet connections at home. VOA's Maxime Moskalkov tells us more.
For more than two decades, the NGO called Computer Corps has been helping low-income immigrants master the internet and computers. According to Pew Research Center, in 2019, 4 in 10 U.S. families with less than $30,000 annual income didn't have a computer at home.
Our mission is to serve low-income adults who need basic computer skills to get a job.
The organization instructors have already helped more than 3,000 students learn how to use a computer. Computer course students come from over 90 different countries and speak more than 100 languages.
Our average age is around 45 or 50, so you get a lot of adults, whether they've been here 20 years, they might already have their citizenship. Some people have just come over, but you get a lot of adults who kind of missed the whole computer revolution for 20 years.
During quarantine, the group has had difficulty continuing to teach because most of their students did not have computers at home. So the group started giving them computers.
We started our sort of computer giveaway ministry where we started asking for donations to purchase low-cost refurbished computers off the internet and have them delivered, and then meet with students individually wearing masks and gloves and hand them computers. And then when they get home, we work with them over the phone to help them learn how to set it up.
The result, the group was able to continue classes remotely. Among them, women, who make up about 70% of the students at Computer Corps.
I knew how struggling and how hard it is to find a job and also to be proficient in computer skills. It's not easy nowadays to find a job if you don't know how to use even the basics. So doing this, just teaching our students and reaching out for people who are struggling, especially nowadays with what's going on. Coronavirus made things worse because a lot of people, of our students, even the alumni, lost their jobs.
Karia El Ghosh came to the U.S. from Lebanon in 1994. She has spent the last 25 years working in places where she did not need any computer skills. The last 2 years helping teachers at a daycare. It was her daughter who encouraged her to finally get acquainted with computers.
I'm getting, more comfortable, like going on computer. Go learn what is the structure of the computer, like, you know, programming or filing a document or going on Excel or PowerPoint. I didn't have any idea about this. All this language was very hard for me to understand it. I used to type with one hand. Now I use my both hands.
Getnet Tadesh is from Ethiopia. He works as an Uber driver and says that after the pandemic came to the U.S. and strict quarantine measures have been implemented, the number of passengers dropped significantly, but Tadesh finally got some time to learn.
I would like to work on computer for my career, so it's a good start to me. I'm very happy now. So all computer core staffs are very nice, very kind, and they're helping us a lot.
Specialists say many people, especially the elderly, believe computer skills are more than they can handle. But Computer Corps instructors, who themselves learned to use computers at the NGO, are a living example that once you overcome the initial fear, anything is possible. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We're so glad that you were able to join us today. You can continue by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also on Twitter and Instagram, you can see us on YouTube. We thank you so much for being with us. Come back again tomorrow. We also thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. That's Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Pulpyboom. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.